You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Manchester United score in the opening 10 minutes for the fourth time out of Ralph Rangnick's 8 games in charge. Is it a trend? Well, we'd certainly like to hope so. The first half, or at least the first half an hour, was very good away at Aston Villa, but unfortunately not the 3 points, just the one, with two late goals conceded. A real shame after an afternoon which showed plenty of promise. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, to Series 7, Episode 21, with me, Harry Robinson, and Jack Tate. As always, we will be talking about Villa away, of course. We'll be talking about Rangnick's in-game management, about the promising signs that I just referenced, about Anthony Martial. We'll have a quick youth and loan roundup, and then we'll be previewing two games midweek away at Brentford on Wednesday night at a new stadium, the Brentford Community Stadium, I think its official name is, and then at home to West Ham on Saturday. Jack, let's begin with the good before we move on to the bad and the ugly. The good against Villa was plenty. Lots of things to be pleased about, lots of things to be hopeful about. And I think we can probably take it to, how can we sum up the good? United had a compact team shape, defended well for the start, created lots of chances, started really quickly. And there was an element of control for much of the game. Let's leave aside the fact that it was surrendered late on, but the first half an hour was really, really good.
The first half an hour was probably the most enjoyable spell of football Man United have had in a long, long time. Definitely since Solskjaer left, and probably off the top of my head, since maybe the Newcastle game. It has been the Newcastle home game. Let's just say not Newcastle away, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, it was thoroughly enjoyable to watch Man United. We controlled the game. We absolutely dominated Villa. We obviously got a bit lucky with the early goal, which I think definitely helped the team's confidence. And you could sort of see the lift in the play. But even before that goal went in, you know, we'd started the game so strongly. We were quick out of the traps. We were flying around the pitch, putting Villa under all sorts of pressure. You know, defensively, the press came back, but the press came back without being sort of maniacal. You know, the press was there, but it wasn't done in a way that was disjointed. It wasn't one player just deciding to go on their own. It was very cohesive. It was very joint up from midfield to attack to defence. It was everything that we wanted, really, from this Ralph Rangnick Man United team. The chance creation maybe was the only slight area where we weren't at our best. You know, we didn't create a huge amount other than Fernandez's goal that came from Martinez's error, obviously, but I think in general, you know, there was so much to be happy with from that first half, especially the first half an hour.
Yeah, and I think it does come down. Look, we've been asking to see less of a gap in United's team for so long. Whether that gap's been caused by a one or two man press from the front and then no one following it up, or it's just been the defence and the midfield has been too far apart, and we absolutely didn't see that. We saw the opposite of it, and I think the way that Bruno Fernandes and Ralph Rangnick both referenced it post match and spoke about it in some detail made me realise that that is the foundation of whether this team will be good or not, is how compact can the team stay. And against Villa in the opening half an hour, it was brilliant. And it was the longest that any team has taken to register a shot against Manchester United this season. 32 minutes until Aston Villa had their first shot on target. In a Premier League away match, that is impressive, regardless of what happened afterwards, although we will...
Against the team that's been playing well recently as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's impressive. And I think it came down to the fact that, yeah, there was very little space between the defence and the midfield, and the press was done in the right manner. It wasn't rushed. It wasn't done when everyone wasn't ready for it. It was, if we have the ability to go and press, then we will. Otherwise, we're not going to go and be stupid about it. I think after 32 minutes, we lost that team shape a little bit. And the other thing we lost was how well we'd retained possession. Because in the opening half an hour, the midfielders aside probably, who I think didn't have an amazing game, Matic and Fred, but the rest of the team... The kind of common culprits for gifting away possession, Bruno Fernandes, Greenwood, and I guess Elanga would normally be one as a creative attacking player. They were pretty patient in possession and pretty economical in what they were doing, at least relative to normal.
I don't think I've seen United keep the ball as comfortably and in such a sustained fashion at any point this season, to be honest. Even in our good performances back right at the beginning of the year, it was all a bit sort of cavalier from United, as things have tended to be with this group of players. We kept the ball very, very well. We kept the ball without looking too threatening, but it also wasn't, you know, just completely empty, recycled passes around the back. We looked dangerous without sort of creating too many real clear-cut chances. It was probably the best functioning midfield that I've seen United have all season, I think. I actually really like the Matic-Fred combination in midfield. Matic, towards the end of the game, was... You know, one of the real low points, and I think one of the big culprits for us not hanging on. But in that first half, what he offers us with his control on the ball and his ability to make progressive passes consistently is a really, really big factor, especially when we're playing against teams where you would expect us to control possession. And it really showed that first half we had complete control of the game, both in and out of possession. I thought it was, you know, despite how the game ended, which ended, you know, terribly, and I personally was very, very annoyed coming out of that game with a day to sort of reflect and look back on it. I think you really can only take, well, mostly you can take positives from that game, because I think it built on some of the better things that we saw in parts against Aston Villa in the FA Cup at the start of the game. And we built on that further. You know, it needs to become more sustained. But there are, I think these are the most positive signs that we've seen under Ranić since that very first game against Palace. And that's hopefully a good sign of good things to come.
Yeah, I think so. It felt, interestingly, it was quite a different style of play to the opening half an hour against Palace, which was loads of vertical passes through the lines, loads of that kind of swarm pressing against the touchline. We didn't see quite as much of that, which is interesting. Obviously, that was in a different formation. That was the 4-2-2, the start of it. We've now reached the end of that course, and this was a kind of 4-2-3-1, kind of 4-3-3. I thought Bruno Fernandes' role was quite interesting in that we've seen a lot this season. He's pushed up right alongside the striker, and sometimes he's done Ronaldo's running for him. Other times, that's just been his role. And this, he was playing quite significantly deeper, sometimes dropping in. Matic would be further back, and then Fernandes would drop in alongside Fred in a kind of three-man midfield, and it allowed him to be really creative. I did get the sense, and the people I spoke to before the match will hopefully back this up for me, there was just a sense of, maybe it's because Fernandes has played well at Villa Park before, but I just had this sense that Bruno was about to have one of his good games again. And it was so satisfying to see, because we have missed Bruno being very good. And he was excellent.
Yeah, it was very, very good. Best performance in quite a while. I really, really liked that deeper role that he played. I think the 4-3-3 that we ended up with worked beautifully, with Matic sitting a little bit deeper in sort of the number six role. And effectively, you had Fred and Fernandes as sort of two number eights. And I think it worked beautifully. I don't know if this was something that the position did, sort of the tactical change did, or whether it was just Fernandes personally sort of having a different game. But it felt like Fernandes playing a little deeper, it almost made him feel he has a bit more responsibility to keep the ball. You know, I don't know if it's because he felt that he had less creative burden on him not being in the number 10 role, but it felt like he his first instinct when he picked up the ball wasn't always to look for that, you know, amazing Hollywood pass over the top of the defence or through the lines. He kept things a lot more simple, and that was a huge reason why our control of the game was so much better. And he did that without losing the creativity that he can bring. You know, when the opportunity arose, he was still, you know, still our main creative presence. I really liked him playing a little bit deeper. I think it worked really well. And it also meant that I think the press was a bit more cohesive as well, a bit less disjointed, because when you have Fernandes starting from deeper, if he does decide to go, and he is generally the player that, you know, is want to start off the press quicker than others, I would say, I think it's easier for the likes of Fred to follow, and even the fullbacks to follow, when he's starting from deeper rather than starting from 10, 15 yards further up the pitch. I think it was a really nice tactical change. You know, it remains to be seen how long that continues going for, but I think this has been a bit of a challenge for Ranić so far in how he sort of deploys Fernandes, and whether we play with the traditional number 10, because we obviously in the 4-2-2 haven't had a traditional number 10. We have in the last few games as Fernandes has been there, but we've suffered in our control of the game. And I think actually seeing that you can play Fernandes a bit deeper, it worked really well. And I think it also makes that team a little bit more easy to sort of bring players in and out of.
Others
can play that number 10 role, or sorry, that number 8 role that Fernandes was in, whereas really we only have Van der Beek that can play the number 10 role.
Yeah, and importantly as well, we're now realising that Fred, as well as Scott McTominay, looks better further up the pitch, which, I mean, we probably all knew anyway, but the last few weeks have really demonstrated that. And that just again puts emphasis on how significant a deeper midfield signing would be to this team. I don't know the exact person who would be the right fit, and ultimately it's not my job to know, as I've said many times, but it's emphasizing the fact that we could be getting even more out of players who are doing their jobs, Fred and McTominay and Fernandes, if we made the right signing, which we should have made in summer, and probably the summer before that and the summer before that, and looks like we might not even make in January. And that will hold us back. On Fernandes, I mean, the statistics back up what you're saying. I've only got the first half stats to hand, but he completed 27 of his 32 attempted passes. And the same was Greenwood, 22 of 23, Alanga, 13 of 15. For the creative players in the side, those are good numbers. They're positive. And it was, we kept things simple. And you spoke about the Hollywood pass. We didn't have those kind of audacious chipped balls, the back heels or the unlikely crosses. We kept things simple. And you said it earlier, the way we retained possession was really nice. So, I mean, those were the kind of three tenets of it: keeping it simple in possession, getting those early goals again. It's interesting. 4 out of 8 games is significant to score in their first 10 minutes. And finally, that compact team shape. So going forward, we just need to see that held on for longer, I guess.
And not being able to score early goals is one of the biggest downfalls, I think, that we had under Solskjaer. We said so much that, especially against teams that would sit back against us, we'd end up, you know, inevitably going into half time at 0-0. And then, you know, the tension builds, the team would sort of try too hard to create things, and it would all sort of fall down. That is a significant part of what's happened so far, and hopefully something that continues, because especially when you have a team that has so many players who seem to thrive on confidence and seem to be swayed with their confidence, getting that early goal is a huge, huge factor. And I think, you know, delivering some better first half performances. I think you saw it against Villa. We'd already started well, but the goal just seemed to lift us even more. And especially with sort of the energy in the defensive work, I think getting an early goal is such a huge difference maker for how you then approach the rest of the game defensively.
Yeah.
I think you're dead right about the need for a defensive midfielder too, because we're seeing now, I think as we've seen Matic come a bit more into the fold in recent weeks, which has allowed Fred and McTominay, both as a result of Matic playing, but also as a result of this system that is a little bit more aggressive in defence and with the ball than what we had under Solskjaer, I think you're seeing Fred and McTominay, and Fred in particular, really start to thrive in a more advanced, sort of typical box-to-box role rather than the sort of holding midfield role they've been asked to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, Matic, I thought, did well actually for the first 60 minutes against Villa, and really helped sort of string that game together for us. But he, at his age, at the level physically that he's at now, he can't be relied upon to do that for 90 minutes. And it was his man running off of him that was the catalyst for Villa's second goal. You know, that towards the end of the game, he was just so tired, and I was surprised he didn't get taken off.
I mean, that's a nice segue into the bad after the good, the in-game management. And it was so clear. I mean, I thought Matic was good. Maybe not as good as you're saying, just in my opinion. But yes, there was a clear point where things started to turn. And it was strange because after the break, Villa looked really good and they had a few shots. And then it was about 55 minutes where we kind of regained some control. And then we had 10 minutes of it. And then suddenly you thought, no, this is going. And it was so blatant that Matic had to come off. And yet he stayed on and on and on. And Rangnick delayed and delayed. And that's when you concede, when you delay. And this is a problem. I mean, Matic should be doing better than that, but he was also hung out to dry. He was tired and he had too much ground to cover. Either something in the system had to change, and Rangnick said he thought about going to three at the back, but didn't because he wasn't confident enough in it. Or the personnel had to change. I felt Van der Beek should have come on about 60 minutes. It seemed obvious. We just needed to regain some control on it and start keeping possession better. But this is a wider point about Rangnick. The subs have been questionable. The Villa FA Cup game, we spoke last week, very good. They got us some control of the game back. We spoke about how in the 6 minutes of added time, it actually felt really calm, even though Villa had been putting us under pressure, and that was down to the subs. But that's an outlier at the moment. The other substitution decisions have been questionable consistently, and I think that lost us the game, to be honest. Not lost us the game. You can see how I feel about a 2-2 draw. Drew us the game, lost us the win, yeah.
Yeah, no, I can agree more. I think, you know, pretty much everyone watching that game could see the subs were needed, and it was painfully obvious for a good 15 minutes, I think, before Villa even scored their first goal, the subs were needed. It was strange as well, given... So I agree with everything you're saying about, you know, Rangnick's subs in general have not been good at United so far. He's often delayed too long before making changes, and changes that he has made have been sort of head scratching. It was odd to see him sort of revert to that after acknowledging publicly how well his subs worked against Villa in the Cup last week, and how changing to that different formation, not only did they help, but specifically helped in becoming a similar situation, actually, hanging on to a lead. This time it was 2-0 compared to 1-0 in the FA Cup, and needing to regain some control. Because in the FA Cup game, it was very similar. You know, we were holding on to a lead. Villa was starting to dominate the game and have too many chances. And he brought Van der Beek on, switched to a diamond, and we regained control immediately. You know, we're playing... With the exception of Philip Coutinho, we're playing the exact same team here, and, you know, could easily have brought Van der Beek on, I thought, for Fernandes and moved to a diamond.
Yeah.
And it was just odd that wasn't something that seemed to be in his mind. He mentioned he was thinking of going to three at the back.
What was
odd was that there was, it's one thing to make the subs and they just not turn out you know, but at that point in the game, the game was slipping away from us obviously. Yeah. It was very, very painfully obvious that Villa were probably going to score in the next 10 or 15 minutes. So change something. You know, it wasn't as if we were playing well and you sort of don't want to disrupt the way that things are going. Things were already going badly. So at that stage, you have to try something. If it doesn't work, but we were going to concede if we didn't change anything.
You could tell they were delayed because first Sancho comes on just after Villa have scored their first goal. At which point you're wondering Sancho could have come on much earlier. Fine, good. But at which point you're thinking, is Sancho really the right person to come on here? And then by the time Villa scored their second goals, he's lined up his next subs. But then we're taking Bruno Fernandes off when we suddenly need a winner. Yeah. And you just thought, the whole thing made me wonder managing on the touchline is clearly a great skill, but is making those instinct decisions just something you need practice for? And it almost certainly is. And it's worth remembering that Rangnick hasn't been directly managing on the touchline for some time now. And maybe he obviously spoke about maybe he was going to change to three at the back, but didn't. Maybe he just needs to find that confidence in his instincts again. And I hope he will find that. And I expect he will find that before the season is out. But it's interesting that maybe it's something that you just lose, just that little spark in that you need to either have the confidence or have the recent errors and recent successes in your head that make you think, yeah, that's the one?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of a few things. I think practice is definitely one. I think a lot of being a good in-game manager is instinct, to be honest. It's instinct and just sort of having the ability to go with your gut and go through with your decisions and just live with them if they don't work. You know, there's no guarantee that subs are going to work out.
Yeah.
But I think you have to have a feel for the game as you're there on the touchline and go with what your instinct tells you. And it's clear that Ranić had some indecision there. I think the other thing as well is knowing your squad. And that's probably another aspect of this that's proving a little difficult so far. There are a number of players, Van de Beek, Lingard among them, that, you know, Ranić hasn't had too much time with and hasn't seen them on the pitch all that much. And that, you know, in those two players' cases is sort of down to him not playing them very much. But I think a combination of those two things are probably still not quite being totally comfortable with the squad, and then also being just very out of practice when it comes to sort of dealing with in-game management is probably a big factor in why his subs so far really have been sort of short of what we would expect. You know, I do have some sympathy, at least with the Matic thing, in that we didn't have a great option on the bench because of McTominay's suspension. But, you know, at that point, he mentioned wanting to go three at the back. That was a very obvious change that you could have made. You know, we had Harry Maguire on the bench, very capable centre-back that could have come on, go to three at the back. Fred, who was on the pitch, has proven before he's capable of playing in sort of a deeper midfield role. There were a lot of options that we had at our disposal, even despite the fact that McTominay wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you would hope that as time goes on, both of those issues, the being out of practice and not knowing the squad quite as well as you would hope, would get better and improve as he became sort of more used to being on the touchline again. He gets more acquainted with the squad. But, you know, having said that, it has been 2 months now, and, you know, it's a decent chunk of time. Well, not 2 months, about 6 or 7 weeks now for him, you know, with this squad, getting used to the players back on the touchline. You know, you'd hope to see some improvement, and we did against Villa, but really you have to say that is the outlier at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Against Villa in the FA Cup, I'm talking, not this game.
Yes. Yes. One positive we didn't mention at the start was Anthony Elanga, although we referenced him. He was great. He was composed. He showed really good decision-making. He accepted when he couldn't take his man on and then didn't just try it anyway, didn't just punt it past him. He came back in and looked for the pass and carried on keeping the ball. When the chance was there to take on his man, he did do it, and he did it with some success. And I thought Greenwood as well showed better decision-making than in other games. There was still a couple where he probably should have crossed it instead of shot. But in terms of just outside the penalty area, his decision-making, I thought, was good, and his ability to keep the ball. But yeah, Elanga, really exciting. Great work, great pace, obviously. But it was the decision-making and the composure, which I thought was very good.
Yeah, I thought he was a good performance without sort of doing anything headline-grabbing. He was very good on the ball. It reminds me quite a lot of his performance against Wolves at the back end of last season, where everything he did felt very comfortable. It felt very efficient. You know, often when you see young players come in, even comparing to sort of Amad Diallo when he's played, you know, Amad is clearly very talented, but everything feels quite off the cuff and sort of helter-skelter, which is great in a young player, you know, being that talented and quite raw. But Elanga felt very polished for a young player, which was really good to see. I think every time he's played in the few opportunities he's been given, he's done very well. Ranić seems to really like him. It was clear from the moment that Ranić took over, there were reports that Elanga was someone that had impressed in training, and I hope that he continues to get these opportunities, because I thought
five appearances now already.
Yeah.
Which surprised me.
And you know, not
he's come
in,
on in
not in nothing games either. You know, these are Premier League games that he's played in. He came on at the end of the FA Cup game, obviously, but other than that, these have been, you know, serious Premier League games that he's been playing, and not sort of League Cup throwaway matches. So, you know, I think the future is bright for Elanga, in that he's made such an impression on the coach already. I think it's a really good opportunity for him, and he took it, like I said, without doing anything headline grabbing. I thought everything he did was good. He didn't stand out in a bad way at all. He didn't look undersized, or he didn't look like he wasn't up for the physical challenge, which is always difficult when you step up from the under 23s. So yeah, I thought he did very, very well, and some really good signs for him. I hope that he continues to get those chances, because to be honest, he doesn't look particularly out of place compared to the other options that we have at the moment.
Not at all, no. And it will be useful for us to to have those options. Hopefully we see a bit of Ahmad soon. His future is a little uncertain. I think he's supposed to be going out on loan, but finding a loan move in England has been difficult, and he wants to play in England rather than go abroad, even though Feyenoord are still interested in a couple of other clubs. But yeah, Alanga good. Yeah, bad, ugly, Anthony Martial situation. I'm not sure I care enough to talk too much about it. It seems Rannick maybe kind of messed up his words slightly when he said he refused to be in the squad, and then Martial responded, and it's unclear. But it's ugly and it looks bad for the club, and is another sign that the club is in mild disarray, and mild is putting it kindly. And that's the strange thing, is we can, at the moment as a United fan, you can have these kind of positives and sources of hope from good performances or good half an hours, but there's always that underlying feeling of disheartening, dispiriting realization, I think, that so much of the club is still broken, and that the foundations we thought that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had built quite strongly are turning out to be not so strong, and that they were, just as in the past we've papered over the cracks, that they were maybe putting like that kind of foam that hardens up in your bathroom tiles over the cracks, but that kind of disintegrates after a little bit of time, which is what has seemed to be happening.
Just a little bit of weed killer between the tiles, maybe, yeah, on the driveway, something like that. The Martial situation is a bit of an odd one. You know, I can only imagine that Rannick sort of misused his words. You know, I imagine there was probably some sort of conversation between Rannick and Martial where Martial reiterated his desire to leave, and then Rannick sort of decided, well, if you're going to leave, you're not playing. And the way he presented it to the media was as if Martial would refuse to play, which obviously Martial quite rightly didn't take kindly to. It's a situation that, to be honest, it's a situation, firstly, like you said, that is another example of the club being run just in a pretty absurd fashion, and, you know, making a meal out of yet another player's situation. The one bright spot, I think, in all of this, and sort of in any player dealings that we have at the moment, is that I at least have belief that Rannick is fully in charge.
Yeah.
And what that means, that even if Rannick is making the wrong decisions, even if you disagree and think that Martial should stay, and to be honest, I don't. I think Martial is absolutely free to leave at this point. At least we sort of know that Rannick is the one that's going to be here for a while building this team. And so even if Rannick doesn't fall out with Martial or he leaves in sort of an ugly fashion, I at least know that this isn't going to be a decision that someone else is going to come in 6 months and start saying publicly that, you know, we shouldn't have let Martial go, this was a bad decision, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that is sort of the one silver lining from all of this, is that probably for the first time in years, we actually have some clear-ish sense of who is in charge of sort of taking this team forward and planning for the future. I say clear-ish because there's obviously still Darren Fletcher, John Murta involved, and sort of how the division of duties is going to be between the three of them is still slightly unclear. But from reports, it sounds like Rannick is the one who's sort of driving the boat on, in terms of looking ahead, sort of strategizing how United will approach the future and sort of trying to build the team for the next few seasons. So that is at least something that I can look at and think, okay, even if we're making decisions that I disagree with, at least there's one person in charge, sort of, who's hopefully making these plans how we go into the future. So it is a bit of a mess, the Martial situation. Yeah. It's, from a fan's perspective, it's sad, honestly, to see that Martial's career has ended at United anyway, has probably going to end like this. You know, just thinking back to, was it 2015 or 16 when he 15, signed? I can't even remember which
he
one
was
it was
amazing
now.
And
15, you know, the debut goal against Liverpool, that, not just that day, but that whole season, he was so exciting to watch. And it's sad, honestly. That's probably my biggest emotion. It's just sad to see that his career is at United is probably going to end
it's
like
also,
this. But from a footballing perspective, I can't argue with it. I think this is absolutely the right time for it.
It looks bad for Manchester United that yet another talented young player's development has ended badly. Lots of players have left United in the last 10 years in the Edward Wood era and gone on to do good things elsewhere that they couldn't do at United. And we've let down lots of players' career and held them back. And yes, Martial could have done more himself and certainly should have done more himself, but it's also the club have a a history with this, unfortunately. Okay, let's move on. Very quick youth loan and women's roundup, and then we'll preview the games against Brentford and West Ham. In youth news, the 23s were beaten at City. Three goals conceded in the first half, torn apart really, the floodgates opened, started off defending okay, but then yeah, penalty for City, James McAtee scored, then Keiki, a £10 million Brazil winger, scored for City after Mate Kovar in goal gave away the ball, and then Oscar Bob scored in similar circumstances. Joe Hugo got one back in the second half after Shola Shuratiri had won the ball back. But yeah, 3-1 defeat and not a very good performance, and lots of lessons to be learned. In the FA Youth Cup though, the under-18s won comfortably away at Reading and will now host Everton in the fifth round, which will be played sometime before the 5th of February at Old Trafford. When is yet to be announced. They also had a Premier League Cup game scheduled for the weekend, but that was postponed for a second time at West Bromwich Albion, whose pitches seem to be constantly frozen. In loan news, Brandon Williams got a good assist for Norwich City this week in the Premier League against Everton as they beat them 2-1 and got Rafa Benitez sacked. Ethan Galbraith got an assist for Doncaster, but they lost 2-1 against Wigan, for whom Will Keane, ex-academy player, scored. He's doing well. Obviously got called up to Ireland early this year. Ted Mengi started for Birmingham, his second start for them after starting in the cup against Plymouth, then again started against Preston North End away. Nishan Bernard also started for Hull, they lost to Stoke, and Ethan Laird hasn't played for Bournemouth yet because of a slight injury. And in terms of graduates, obviously there were Alangra and Mason in the first team, but also elsewhere, Tom Lawrence scored twice, an academy graduate, scored twice for Derby as Wayne Rooney's team got an eighth win of the season. And it is brilliant to watch what Rooney's doing with Derby. And I think there's so many people egging them on now. And as for the women, great win for them. Their first game since Christmas, 5-0 against Birmingham, who had just beaten league leaders Arsenal 2-0 the week before. So good win that. Started really well. Leah Galton had a great game, and that takes United above Spurs in the WSL, level on points with Chelsea, who have a couple of games in hand, and 4 points behind Arsenal, who I think have one game in hand. But United really finding some form now. That's four clean sheets in a row, three league wins in a row, two consecutive 5-0 wins, and they play Arsenal in the cup in midweek. As for United, men's team play Brentford on Wednesday in the Premier League, the rescheduled game from December. Jack, what are you expecting?
Brentford are a strange team. I think they started the season so brightly and have really, I think, fallen off the level that they were at. Defensively, they've been struggling quite a bit, but I expect still a tough game. I think the Brentford Community Stadium is still not a particularly easy place to go. Brentford are a team that are quite aggressive in everything that they do, both on and off the ball, which is a recipe that United don't tend to play particularly well against. I think having McTominay... Is McTominay back from his suspension? He is, right? It was only one game, wasn't
it? Yeah.
So, I think having him back will be a big bonus just to get some extra legs in midfield, to be honest. And him and Fred, maybe alongside Matic, maybe just the two of them, I think, you know, are a partnership that can work well.
Yeah.
One thing that I would really like to see, I mean, I'm assuming Ronaldo will come back in. I really want to see Jadon Sancho just have a run of games on the right. You know, yeah. I realised when he came on yesterday that I actually don't think he's played a single game as a right winger at United yet. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Greenwood has played there pretty much every game. And when Sancho has played, it's always been on the left. He might have had a few spells on the
spells,
right.
He's had spells, yeah.
Like during the game, I know they've switched flanks a little bit, but it's, I mean, again, just talking about the mismanagement of talent. You know, Sancho came in as sort of the answer to this right-wing profile that we've been missing from our squad for 6 or 7 years, and now he hasn't even played. Yeah. I don't think he's started a game, definitely.
I think he's been playing okay recently.
Yeah, he has.
But he's been dropped from the team. I'm not sure what that's down to. I'm sure we'll be back in soon. But yeah, it'd be nice to see him at Brentford. And yeah, you're right. It'll be tough, not only because of the way Brentford play, but also this is probably, aside from the first game of the season against Arsenal, maybe one of the biggest games in their new stadium. Yeah. United coming to town, new stadium.
And, you know, these midweek nighttime fixtures, mid-week, there's just something about them that I think the atmosphere, especially when it's sort of a lower table team against a top table team, the atmosphere is always tough.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford have been waiting 74 years for this, so... 75 years for this, I think. So they will be enjoying themselves on Wednesday night. I think we might see quite a lot of changes, actually. because Maguire was on the bench for Anna Lindelof started against Villa, but Maguire on the bench and fit again. So I think Maguire might come back in. We could see Sancho come back in. I doubt Alanga will start again, especially if Ronaldo's fit again. Lots of possible changes, I think. And of course, yeah, McTominay and Shaw both back from injury. On the subject of fullbacks, I thought Telles was pretty poor against Aston Villa. I thought Dallow was okay, but again, we didn't see much from the fullbacks against Villa, did we?
Telles started the game really well. The first like 10 minutes or so, him and Ilanga and Fernandes on that left side were great. Yeah. And then, yeah, he drifted out of the game.
He just didn't.
In an attacking sense, and defensively, I don't think Telles is good enough to play as a conventional left back. I think wing back is the only position he can really play at this level.
He just doesn't offer those. There's space for him to run in behind and he won't take it. And it's frustrating sometimes, but you can say that for lots of our players. He's
very much a player that wants to rely on like crossing and set pieces, I think. And so that means that he often doesn't take advantage of space in behind because he wants to stay a bit deeper and get a better angle for a cross. You know, he's a player that loves sort of those crosses from deep, sort of just outside of the 18 yard box, you know, sort of whipping them in around the front. And you know, he's very good at them, but that is pretty much all of his attacking game. And then defensively, he just doesn't track runners very well defensively. There was a chance before the first goal, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be key at Brentford. I mean, you're thinking, which players do we need here? We need people who can track runners. So that might rule out a couple of people. Greenwood's not amazing at that. Wan-Bissaka's not great at that. So you'd expect to be Dallow, and Telles isn't great at that. So you expect to be Shaw. You need those legs in midfield. So probably McTominay and Fred again. But then how do you break Brentford down? Because there's this idea of them being open. They play well, but they're not open. They do sit back against the bigger teams. So then you're looking at how are you going to break them down. So you probably don't want Cavani as well as Ronaldo. Perhaps it's a time for Sancho and Van der Beek to get their chance. You probably don't want Greenwood. So yeah, maybe it is a time for somehow to have a Van der Beek, Bruno, Sancho, Ronaldo front four. I wouldn't be opposed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you go back to the 4-2-3-1 with Fred and McTominay deep, Fernandes at number 10, Van der Beek on the left, maybe normally on the team sheet, Sancho on the right and Ronaldo up front. Or, you know, Fernandes and Van der Beek can sort of be interchangeable. You know, maybe you sort of go back to the 4-2-2 and have Sancho as sort of nominally alongside Ronaldo, with him dropping a bit deeper, Ronaldo sort of trying to play off the last defender. It's tough because it's a combination of four that I like the idea of. It's just tough to get them in a team together.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, maybe the way you do it is you play Van der Beek a little bit deeper. Maybe play him alongside Fred and McTominay, which, you know, I think is potentially an option, especially against the Brentford team that will probably sit back quite a lot. I think that's a good option. Maybe you go McTominay and Van der Beek at the base of midfield, and then maybe Ilanga gets another start with Fernandes at number 10, Sancho on the right, Ronaldo up front. Yeah. I quite like that idea.
Well, I think it'll be hard. Early goal, I'll be confident. Let's hope
Brentford feels like a game that could easily be 3-0 to United, or it could be a really awful 90 minutes. I think if we get a goal and control the game early, I think you know, we could easily steamroll Brentford.
It's partly because of Brentford, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I mean.
Southampton steamrolled them, Liverpool did, other teams
But
have.
I think if it goes well for you in the first half, especially if the crowd starts getting into the game, I think it could end up being really tricky.
Yeah, you need to keep the ball well early on and hopefully get a goal, but most importantly, get that control of the game.
Yeah.
So we can hope for that. As for West Ham, always a bit weird previewing weekend matches when there's a midweek one. West Ham are good. It's going to be hard. That's all I'm going to say for now. Anything else?
No, it's going to be hard. And not only are West Ham a good team, I think they're stylistically, they match up very well against us. Just how quickly they move on the counter-attack is something that we really struggle with. I think Bowen, especially on the right wing, is going to cause us all sorts of problems. He's so fun to watch, Bowen. I think just the way that...
I had a great fact about him this week. To get his speed up, he trained in his granddad's potato field. And he said, it's like running in sand, but if sand was much heavier. And like, so basically you're running in there and you're going really slowly. And then as soon as you get out on a really nice grass pitch, then suddenly it feels really easy, which is the same idea as Stanley Matthews from the 50s. He used to wear, firstly, he'd train in weighted boots that were like weighted down. And then on the way to games, he'd wear really heavy shoes and then wear them all the time until just before he went out. And then he'd change into these really like custom made light boots that would break really like after like three or four games. He was the only player in England to wear them. And then he changes to them. But when he went out on the pitch, suddenly everything felt light as a cloud. So he was absolutely rapid, even when he was
maybe that's what
44
maybe that's what United should be doing whenever we have a couple of weeks off, instead of these warm weather training camps in Dubai. Maybe we should
potato
be
fields
going to potato fields. Yeah,
let's all head to Cork. Yeah.
But yeah, I think West Ham would be a very tough game. I think if we come out there with a win, we've done well. Defensively, I think West Ham can be got at. They obviously just conceded three goals to Leeds, who've really been struggling all season. So
yeah,
I don't think it's a game that's where we're going to struggle to create and struggle to score. But defensively, I do worry. I think in some ways, actually, I think maybe the best strategy for us in the game, the best tactics would actually be to try and play on the counter attack, because I think, in an odd way, the more control that we have over that game, the more worried I am about West Ham. I think if you can shut down the space for West Ham to attack in, I think their ability to create chances goes down massively. But if you give them space, especially on the counter-attack with Bowen, Antonio, Fornals running at you, then you're in serious trouble.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting. That should be a good game. Two teams with good managers and some players in form, some not. But yeah, we'll see. On a Saturday, 3 p.m, an absolute treat.
Talking about holding midfielder, Harry, as well, we can do some scouting of Declan Rice. Absolutely, he might be the best candidate for that role.
Yeah, yeah. I fear he's a better version of Scott McTominay and not exactly what we need in that holding role. But he's obviously brilliant. But I fear he is an improved McTominay, not exactly the profile we need. But we shall see. United are certainly interested in him. That seems clear. But we'll wrap up there.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
I think for England, I think he does a bit more of the holding role. For West Ham, he is very much a box-to-box midfielder. But for England, when he's been playing alongside Calvin Phillips, I think he's proven he can play a bit more of that holding role. It's just whether that's his natural game.
Yeah, it would seem he's doing that box-to-box role so well for West Ham. He just looks amazing playing that. And he's stepped up so much. He has got so much better.
I didn't actually rate him that much. That, to be honest, when he first burst onto the scene, I didn't really get the hype. I just thought he was too limited on the ball for me. He was just sort of a big bruiser of a midfielder, but he's improved on the ball so much.
Yeah. Okay, we'll wrap up there. Thank you for listening, everyone. We're going to go to our Patreon Q&A for information about how to sign up to become a patron for about £1.50 a month. You can listen to our bonus Q&As every week. Go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's POD at the end there for information about that. For Jack's thoughts throughout the week on the Brentford game and anything else, you can follow him on Twitter at
UTD Tate, TAIT.
And you can find me on Twitter at Harry Robinson 64. And as I say, the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod, POD at the end there. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the Brentford game, enjoy the West Ham game, and have a great week otherwise. Goodbye. Okay, patrons, a few questions to answer. So let's rattle through them. Corey Lennox, we'll start with you, Corey. First, just a general point on the game. He says, Alanga brilliant, Greenwood truly belongs in the middle. Sports Social Podcast Network.